Okay. Hi, everybody. Welcome to Evolve, where we focus on the evolution of leadership.
Things have changed, yet we evolve and adapt. But what's next, and what's next for you? Evolve focuses on the intersection of leadership, technology, and workplace. Don't get left behind. Join us in this evolution. Rise and evolve with us.
My name's Kim Ford, and I'm your host. And today I have a very special guest. Stephen, could you take a minute to introduce yourself and your company?
Sure. Stephen Gaffney and the company, Stephen Gaffney Company. And our specialty is around creating consistently high achieving organizations. And the main thrust that we do is do a lot of work with executive leadership teams and making them great. That's in essence what we do.
I love the concept of making executive leadership great, because, you know, it's so funny. So many, in my opinion, so many CEOs, like whether they've developed a widget or this amazing autonomous car company, they have never led a huge group of people. And all of a sudden they develop a product that goes crazy, very successful, and they don't necessarily have the leadership skills to take it to the next level. What would you say, what traits make an excellent leader?
So I think the most important trait of a great leader is creating emotional safety. So I want to talk to you a little bit about this. A lot of people hear the term psychological safety, which I'm not a fan of. And that's what, and the reason why I say emotional safety is because the number one problem that I've experienced with all organizations is lack of honest communication. And what I mean by honest communication is not the truth or lies and the ethics part. I mean, that's obviously critical, but that's not really the biggest problem. The biggest problem is not what people say, it's what they don't say. So for all the leaders that are listening, they're probably saying, that's exactly what the problem is. People surprise or blindside me. How often have we thought, if they had just told me, we could have fixed that problem. If we knew that was a problem with a customer or a problem with our product or service, we could have made that adjustment, but nobody shared it with me, or they shared it with me too late. Or now it's a big problem where could have been a small problem. So why doesn't that happen? And the number one reason why people don't share is lack of feeling emotional safety. In other words, people need to feel it. Psychological safety is too far up here. And we can understand conceptually it's safe to share with each other, but that's not really what's going to make the difference. We need to feel safe. And that has a lot to do with our past, other people's interactions, as well as our interactions and moving forward. This is the first time we've met, but yeah. As a whole, we need to feel safe. That is the key. Because people make decisions on emotions and they justify with logic. So it's emotional safety. And I can even share with you more on why I believe that is even the most important trait.
Can you explain to us give us an example on what that is? So is that making somebody in the office feel like you can say anything? Like somebody Absolutely. That might be afraid to speak?
Well, I'll give you the opposite, and then can have fun with this. Have you ever had somebody say, listen, you can tell me anything. I love honesty, you know, and I love criticism because it makes me grow. And so then you give them some critical feedback and they flip out. They get upset. And then you think to yourself, oh, I'm not going there. In fact, in life, we train and condition people on how we want to be treated. All day long, leaders do that. We all do this. And some people have actually trained us to lie to us. Now, going back to that example, next time that person asks us for feedback, I bet you go, oh, I'm not going there. In fact, as people are listening, you probably can think of some people in our lives where we just don't go there. Well, the problem is within companies, sometimes leaders do that. And I've had a lot of leadership teams, executive leadership teams, where the CEO or president is really good at that, creating that emotional safety. But there's somebody on the team who is very self-righteous, a know-it-all, really hard to deal with, and they shut everybody else down.
Yes.
And that leader's not taking care of it. So that's what I mean by emotional safety.
And I guess, what do you do with to make everybody feel really comfortable that, you know, even beyond that person that, making everybody feel not safe? Like, how do you enable people to feel comfortable?
So one of the best ways is to realize our reaction and pay attention to our reaction and everybody else's reaction and take care of it. So let me give you an example. Recently, I was working with an executive leadership team, and they allowed someone who didn't overtly like dominate. It's just that when other people would share things that they didn't approve of, their eyes would roll. And they're like, oh, whatever. And so they just kind of dealt with it, but it really shut down the leadership team. And so sometimes I've coached people where they'll make the argument, well, you know, the person is technically great and they're really great at these things. But my argument is part of our job, and I would argue the most important part of our job is relationship, teaming, and working with others. So if somebody's technically able to run a good business or a business line or an area, but they don't get along with other people and they actually shut down other people or create difficulty, that actually is a performance issue. So I've reframed this for executives to help them realize this is a bigger problem than you're realizing. In fact, it is the problem you need to deal with. And so then inspiring them to make those corrections. And then there's a lot of tools that I teach and we can go through about creating that emotional safety and how do you get that unsaid said.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of companies, especially, you know, C-suite leaders are dealing with a lot of what I would consider dysfunction, right? There are dysfunctional teams or departments or groups. How can a leader turn a dysfunctional team into a high achieving one?
Great question. So there's 12 essential elements that I've outlined that can plug into any team and it'll make it a consistently high achieving team. But first, let me talk about why I use consistently high achieving team and not high performing team. Mm-hmm. I think high performing team is it's old hat and it's not really what we're after as an executive leadership team or as a team. We're after achievement. Performance could be confused with hard work. And so what we really need to look at is look at achievement, not performance, because otherwise, I work really hard. Well, yeah, but it's about results and then how to do this consistently, right? So on that, there's 12 essential elements. And one of the first ones, the most important part, and this is going to surprise you or surprise most people, is being clear on where we're going and having a North Star PGS. PGS stands for purpose, goals, and strategy. Now, probably people listening say, you know, that's kind of obvious. I know. Well, here's the test. If you're, as you're listening, ask people around you, what is the purpose of our team? And what are the 1 to 3 goals we're all working towards? And brace yourself for the response. Because when I do that in sessions, we get a mixture of answers. In fact, I had a client of mine who got really upset because he's like, oh, we got this figured out. Let's test it. And then, of course, the answers came back all over the place. And he was mad. I said, look, it's a good lesson learned, you know, and then you got to correct that. So knowing where we're going is a critical, is a very critical essential element towards creating that safety and also moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. What are the 4 areas of high achievement?
So the 4 areas of high achievement, the first is knowing the North Star, right? The North Star PGS. So if we're really to focus on the 4 most important part, right? The North Star PGS. The second is the distinction between what we notice and what we imagine. And let me explain how that impacts high achievement. How often have you seen where projects, services have gone awry, those problems? And it was really based on assumptions, not really what the facts were, because people suffer from confirmation bias and they see what they want to see. So that distinction and making it crystal clear, which we can go into how to do that, but that's a second trait. Third, in creating that high achievement, making things really great is what we're talking about, is a concept called be them. And it's more than rapport, it's more than connection. It's the ability, this is how I test people. When you're working with someone, could you play them in a movie? If you were casted in a movie, could you play them? Do you know their mannerisms? Do you know their goals, their what they're up to and how? And most people really can't do that. And their fear is, I don't agree with them. Being them doesn't mean agreeing with them. And there's techniques on how to do that. And that would be the third trait. And the fourth trait is come from anything is possible. It really is amazing how often people will say something can't be done. And I'll say to somebody, how do you know it can't be done? And all they could ever say that's truthful is I've never seen it be done. But that doesn't mean it can't be done. And having people come from anything is possible really opens the innovation and having people be consistently achieving.
Yeah. And I really struggle with the concept of, I love your difference between, you know, especially using the word achievement, because so many people think, like you said, they work really hard. I work really hard. And then, you know, it's all perception, right? Because my working hard, I'm a doer, right? So I can multitask, I can get a ton done in a day, and I love to make a list and check it off. And then there's other people that are really good at what they do, but they might get two things done and I get 12, but they still believe they're working just as hard as I am. And so I love this concept of very much goals-based. And I think a lot of organizations, they're so stuck in tracking somebody's time, you know, especially with this distributed workforce, a hybrid workforce. It's, oh, I want to be on their computer. I have a friend who has been in this kind of situation. It is a distributed workforce for about 18 years. So way before the pandemic, right? It was accepted. If she gets up from her computer and doesn't press a button within 90 seconds, it actually flags her supervisor. So what, one day I was talking to her, and I mean, this is years ago, and I'll never forget it. She's like, hang on, I got to run. And I said, why? She goes, because I hit the button on my dryer and I'm on my countdown. And it doesn't mean that she's in trouble, but if you get a bunch of those flags, then you're basically, you have to explain yourself, and you're allowed to have breaks and things like that. But again, it's all about pressing a button. And what's kind of frightening about that is, like, what goals are we achieving there? Right. I mean, if, as long as she presses the button, she's safe. And they won't let you have a laptop, so you can't move the computer around.
It's amazing. And that's a sign of a major problem with the company, not just for, as you can see, about morale and whatnot, but it actually is a result of leaders not being crystal clear on goals. So if you think about it, if I'm crystal clear on the outcomes of what I want folks to do, I can actually manage by results, achievement, and outcomes, essentially. But if I'm not, I have to put in these mechanisms towards logging on the computer, tracking activity. And it's actually a sign of people not really thinking clearly. So a lot of problems are made more complex rather than simplifying things. Yeah. So actually, all these processes and procedures could be simplified if we just manage by goals. But the question is, do we know what our goals are? And I'll ask people what their goals are for the organization, and I'll get, you know, all the things that violate all the goals things, you know, it's not clear on when it's not crystal clear, doesn't have an end date, all that kind of stuff. So I say this because it's really, that's a sign, a symptom of an issue, but they're easy fixes, but we have to do those fixes.
Yeah, for sure. Talk about talent. Obviously we have this great resignation, we have this talent war, and it's so funny. I do a lot in the technology sector, and prior to the pandemic, they were already experiencing this. They were already fighting amongst themselves to get top talent and retain top talent by providing food 5 days a week or 4 days a week, by providing daycare. And, you know, they even have, some of our clients have slides, like sliding boards, literally going between their floors. So, what are you seeing in regard to, like, how does a company begin to kind of recruit and retain that talent the best?
So first of all, is to look what keeps employees. And the number one thing that keeps employees is if they love their job. Yeah. It's that simple, right? So people say, okay, well, that's kind of obvious, but have you, and this is what I help my clients do. So here's a good question people ask. They should, they could do a survey with one question. Well, actually two-part question, but one overall question. On a scale from 1 to 10, how much do you love your job? 10 is you are thrilled, 1 is you're not. And then whatever score they give it, say, what would it take to make it a 10? And just monitor that. And they're going to find out activities. It could be the relationship with their boss. It could be peers. It could be that we're not clear on the goals. We're not in the know of things. One of these surprising things is people, leaders are forget to tap into people's passion about why they're here. Mm-hmm. And so, and what they're up to. And part of the problem is because they have a company mission that sounds like every other mission, and they don't really say, what are we up to? So for example, even if you look at real estate, we can look at real estate and transactions like that, or we can say, what does that actually mean when somebody is in a place that they love, or corporations are settled in an environment in which people are excited to be there? It's translating this into what I call purpose with impact. Purpose with impact, and really looking at that. But it comes back to, how much do people love their job? So I have a lot of my clients that are now that are just monitoring love of their job. And this is also what's going to surprise people. When you ask this question, often you'll get things that are pretty easy fixes. I'll give you an example. A client of mine asked the workforce, and people started to remark about parking spaces. And first she got upset. She's like, I was thinking, you know, big stuff. Think big, folks. And I said to her, no, this is how people relate to their job. It's what's immediately around them. And so we can do easy things that can make a huge difference and deal with things that do impact the love. For example, working with somebody who's a low achiever. High achievers want to work with other high achievers. That's so right. Getting rid of, taking care of those performance issues and having those kind of conversations are really critical. And there's even a methodology we go through. There's a 9-step methodology on having difficult conversations. But in essence, the key part is having those conversations and taking care of it. But coming back to what we love, and then when people love their job, they tell other people. And then they tell their friends, and suddenly everybody wants to work for your company. It's all back to love of the job.
Yeah, for sure. We have quite a few clients that create this amazing culture, providing phenomenal amenities that nobody else provides. Yet when we do a survey to the company, and this isn't even on the survey, this is a write-in, they ask for flexibility. But when it comes down to these companies, they're creating a culture where, one, these teams feed off of each other. And it's that camaraderie. It's that to be successful. Oh my gosh, you know, Doug just won on a call, so that Bob feels really comfortable. So that's a really tough scenario, because the people are saying they want more flexibility, yet leadership knows that how they've found success is when they're together. So like any advice there, when they're kind of these, they're really butting heads, when, you know, leadership knows this is what it takes for you to be together is why you're so successful, yet the people don't really know that or understand that. And they just think that because of, you know, the pandemic, that, you know, all of a sudden, you know, that's have a flex schedule. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, so it really asks, I think, to think of this in a bigger way. What kind of employees are we looking for? Are we looking for ones that are in the interview asking about pay, benefits, amenities? Yeah. Or are they the kind that are really want to really work for us, right? And are about the mission and about camaraderie. So right. I would venture to say the people that are looking at flexible hours, although that's an important consideration, it's a consideration. And so what I think you're speaking to is that we all intuitively know the kind of people we want, and there's certain people we don't want.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just about filling bodies, so that may not be a good fit. And you raise another really great point, which is, you know, that old Henry Ford comment, you know, if I asked my customers what they wanted, they would have said a faster horse.
Yeah.
So, you know, so it's the idea of, we want to ask these things, right? Whether parking, flexible hours, whatever, but we really want to tie into that love of that job and what makes people love their job. And we know about camaraderie. So that's really important, because another, and I want to just build from what you're saying, because it's so powerful. Sure. Is that leadership is not about popularity. It's about doing the right thing and what we know. So I've had to coach people, and I'm sure you've done this as well, where some leaders are, well, that's not what people want. But that doesn't mean that's not what they really need, or what do they really need? And having that experience to pull that and saying to things. So some of my best clients will do things that are quote unquote unpopular in the beginning, but pay huge dividends. So it doesn't mean we're ignoring our employees, right? I said about, you know, on a scale from 1 to 10, what would make it a 10. But also we want to build those fundamentals that have always worked: mission, camaraderie, teamwork, having people feel good about their job, accomplishing them, you know, appreciating them. And appreciating, again, doesn't necessarily mean some of these amenities. It means just saying, hey, that was an excellent job, and rewarding them accordingly.
Yeah, for sure. How can a leader reveal the unsaid company issues, right? Because we all have them. And I think sometimes leaders, that's the hardest thing for them to do.
Yeah. Great question, because what I find is, here's a good rule of thumb. Bad news about us is always better coming from us than if somebody else discovers it. We never want to play gotcha. And we all have done this, right? Where we're like, should I bring it up? Should I not? And then we hesitate, and then suddenly find out, right? So the thing is, in the absence of notice, remember the kind of fact and opinion, in the absence of data, people make things up. So the absolute worst thing we could ever do is let our silence do the talking. When we let our silence do the talking and we say, well, I don't want to worry people, people fill in the vacuum and they make up a negative version. One of the ways I've proved this is I'll say to people, okay, you send an email to somebody and they don't respond to your email. What goes through your mind? And when I ask people that, they say, well, you know, that person doesn't care, they don't respect, or, you know, they're not thinking about or taking care of certain stuff. And I'll say, okay, who came up with all those explanations? And of course, people say, we did, you know, that we're answering the question. And then was it negative or positive? And people say, well, it was kind of negative what came out, what we're thinking. And then I said, then I'll say, that's why you never want your silence do the talking. Because when you do, everybody else fills in the vacuum and they make up a negative version of it. So it is interesting about getting the unsaid said. And so we don't want to let our silence do the talking. So what do we need to do? We need to say the hard stuff. Yeah. So people might say, but people will get upset. Here's the key. I worked with this one CEO and he was getting the unsaid said and he said, people aren't receiving it well. I said, the problem isn't that you're doing a great job of getting out in front of it, but you're not giving people hope. You're not saying, okay, we are going through these difficult times. This is some bad news, but reframe it in a larger context. And although this is tough, in the scheme of things, we're going to be doing this, this, and this, and get people excited about where we're going. As a mentor said to me, people always want to think that their future is brighter than their past. So Dan Sullivan, a mentor to me, I've learned a lot. Our future is brighter than our past. And when we think about it as a leader, do we create a brighter future for folks than their past? If they do, they will hear a lot of difficult stuff with that frame in mind.
Yeah, no, very, very true. And many, many times in my career, we've run into companies where they're considering a major relocation. And we always tell them to control the narrative. And the reason why is because Pittsburgh's a very small market. And if their employee happens to know somebody in the industry, hears that we're out looking in a different area, all of a sudden that employee now is on Teams chatting with the whole entire other department. Oh my gosh, they're in the market looking in the South. I live in the North. I'm going to have to find a new job. And all of a sudden, disaster. And it's so, you know, many times we're highly recommending that the company actually puts out some type of acknowledgement. Yes, you're going to hear that we're in the market. Yes, we're evaluating our options. But like you said, you have to control that conversation, because if people find out another way, all of a sudden, there's just this, everybody fills in those blanks, right? And those blanks could go any direction. And so I think just like anything else, if you control the narrative, your voice, and I love it when they also ask for feedback. So they say to the company, hey, if you have anything you'd recommend, go ahead and send it, and then have one designated person. So all of a sudden you're saying, not only am I sharing with you this important information, letting you know, but I'm also saying, if you have feedback, you have a voice that we're willing to listen to. And I think that just goes really far.
Absolutely. Because if we don't control the narrative, and I love what you're saying, we break trust. That's the thing. And once we break trust, it's not impossible to gain it back, but people always be suspicious. So I've worked with organizations that have done, you know, been brought in because they didn't control the narrative. They didn't get things out in front. And so they lost people. And so an example is, I remember years ago, I was brought into a company because they were having people leave the company. And when we look back, what had happened is they had gone through these layoffs, but they didn't manage it well. And so what they did is they told people there were not going to be layoffs because they were worried. Then they announced the layoffs and it kept coming. And then when it was all said and done, they said to people, okay, we're done. And the high achievers who stayed, right, they kept them, left. Why? Because trust was broken. They thought, you told us there was no layoffs. Now you're saying it's done. How do I know it's really done? And so they lost a lot of the high achievers. So trust is one of those things that we build trust by people doing what they say, by us doing what we say we're going to do, and really telling the truth. Which goes back to my first point in the podcast, which is the number one problem is lack of honest communication and getting that unsaid said. So if everybody forgets everything out of what we're talking about, the most important thing is to get that unsaid said.
I love it. That's such great advice. And I think leaders right now are really trying to figure out what to do. Everything's changed, right? I mean, what was normal 3 years ago is no longer normal. And what advice do you have right now? If you could give, I think you did just give your piece of advice, right? If there was one piece of advice, what would it be?
So that would be one right around the getting nonsense. But let me give you another one. The other one is to actually reframe all of what we're going through into an evolution. Now, this sounds simple, but how often have you heard about the new normal? What does that really mean? And there, it isn't stationary. I would say the new evolution, where we're at evolving. Let me give you an example. I worked with a leadership team yesterday and a small group as sometimes I'm doing. And it was hybrid, meaning some people were on video the entire, in this case, it was an intense session for 2 days, and a lot were in the room. And so that's the new evolution of how companies need to be, right? And it actually makes sense. So how do we bring them in? How do we feel, make them feel so they're just as engaged as in the room? There's many techniques, but the point that I'm trying to say is the another big tip is to actually reframe all of what we're going to as an evolution. Here's the thing, if you think about it. If I say we're going to change something, people inevitably say, oh, change. You know, what's wrong with the way we did it before? But if I say we're evolving, I mean, about a lot of things. Like, I've worked with organizations and on change management, going through a major transformation, and it's and I have them reframe it to an evolution. And it actually is a truth. It's not a matter of, oh, we're switching out a word and we're playing semantics here. We really are. It's an evolution of what we're doing. And we want to build things so it's we're growing and constantly growing. So again, it goes back to the earlier point, right? If you create a brighter future than the past, and we set this up because an evolution is usually something better, then that can make a huge difference. So if we reframe our thinking towards evolution, not change, it can actually make an organization much more excited and, really importantly, move fast.
I love it. Thank you so much, Stephen. And our goal with Evolve is to enable leaders to learn, connect, and grow together. And can't thank you enough. We could definitely not do this without you. And I love ending with the evolution, because yes, that's basically what this is the evolution of leadership. Thank you again for spending so much time with us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, too.
Absolutely.